Okay, this is the interactive portion of the program. We're going to take your phone calls with Mark Stavish next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're talking tonight about the occult poltergeist obsession. And one of the things we'll ask you to do when you call in is to give us a story or two of things that you may have gone through that you might want to share with us, or things that you might have witnessed as well here with Mark Stavish, our special guest. And Mark, let me ask you this question too. When you were writing your series of books, did you get any special inspiration or anything like that?
Yes. Yes, I did. And that's what's really nice about writing. Of course, you know, when you're working on any project for a long time, you, as we said, attract the kind of muse or inspiration to you, or entities or energies. We're not always sure where those ideas come from. And I think that a lot of that information, which I provided in those books, was very much guided. Now, whether it's from something outside of me or from my inner self, I don't know for certain, but it was always nice to see how things come together.
Do you believe that we have the ability to manifest just about anything we want, positive, negative? We
more
do
or
it?
Less. Yeah, more or less. And then this is where people, you know, we're always using our creative energies all the time. What happens is we often work against ourselves because our thoughts are like soap bubbles. You know, we go from one idea to the next. And this is where the notion of, you know, the egregore comes in, where it can help you, guide you to your goals to some degree, or it can distract you from them if you're not careful. Its dreams become your dreams, and then you don't always know it. So we always say to folks, get a goal in life, have a good spiritual life, and practice, and you'll find that your mind becomes calmer and you become happier, it becomes easier to achieve your goals. And that becomes then self-fulfilling. The more you achieve, the happier you feel.
How many people are fingered as being mentally ill when they have some real possession involved here?
Yeah, that's tricky, because I think it's a symbiotic relationship. I mean, I've had therapists talk to me, and they say, look, there's something going on here that we can't identify, and that would even be paranormal phenomena.
Right,
like
they know.
Right now, we just got disconnected, and there's really no explanation for it. Your engineer's saying, what happened? And I said, I don't know, mine just went dead. And I can't tell you how many times that happens when I'm dealing with folks in the paranormal research community or dealing with this topic where just, boom, the lines go dead.
Back to the calls now. Let's go to John in Palm Harbor, Florida. Hey, John, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hi, yes, I had a question for your guest about objects that are that could have a spirit attached to them.
Okay.
And the reason I ask this, I have an old bowl. It's like a silent butler, a pan that has artwork on it. It's called Qualum Zani of the Wall of Persepolis with the beast that Darius was fighting that belonged to Aleister Crowley.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And now here's what happened, though. I don't bring them out, but occasionally, okay? I collect artifacts. I collect ancient artifacts. And I brought this thing out about 8 years ago because somebody wanted to look at it. We left, went to lunch, and I'm telling you the truth. I mean, you know, a lot of people find this hard to believe. We got back. The object went through the picture window. Nobody touched it. There was nobody at home. My wife and I are both older, and it's sitting out in the yard. And people who have gotten around it don't care for it, don't like it, but I hang on to it just for its artistic value. You'd have to see the artwork on it. It's exceptional, and I was told it may be the lid to his original scorpion bowl that went on top of there that nobody could ever find. And how do you, I mean, if it manifests itself in certain areas, can it be of any harm to people?
Well, there's no question that these spirits can attach to objects. Mark, we have had shows on that, and they mean business.
Well, very much so. As I said earlier, we as human beings have unique opportunities available to us through our sensory experiences in physical life. And a lot of these entities want the same thing. I mean, that's why people reincarnate, because there's unique opportunities here that don't exist in the invisible. So when you have that environment, these things may easily get attached. That's the notion of a blessing. You know, in the old church, they used to say that the angel of the church, or the angel of the bridge, or the angel of the building, you know, that psychic spiritual force that is there to protect and enhance and make healthy that physical structure. And then, of course, we know of the blessings of amulets and talismans. Well, the same is here too. You know, and blessings don't have to be a formal ritual. They can be also just through the constant contact of the energies of that person. That's why you have some knitted booties that your grandmother made for you that you love so much, you know, or something that someone wore that, of course, it's just a common object, but you feel a certain revulsion towards it.
John Zaffis has done a lot of work with objects that are being attached by entities. And it's kind of scary, Mark. It's kind of scary.
Well, you have to really be careful about what you pick up. And I remember years ago being in a class with Shenpen Rinpoche, who was the head of one of the heads of the Nyingma Order of Tibetan Buddhism. And he said, you know, it's very interesting that, you know, people always want this ritual object or this ritual item. He says, go get new ones. Get your own, because you don't really know where that one has been. You don't know what's attached to it. Now, you know, you think this person might have been a good holy person, but you don't know that for certain. So when you get your ritual items, your prayer beads or what have you, go get new ones, make them your own. So I always tell people who are particularly in the antique and the art trade and that kind of thing, you have to have some good, again, spiritual hygiene about you.
Let's go to Brad in Pennsylvania. Take it away, Brad. Go ahead.
Hi, George and Mark. It's an honor to talk to you. I've been listening to Coast since 1991.
Well, thank you.
And anyway, I have a long story about being attacked by a legion of demons and was saved by singing the Lord's Prayer. So I just want to put that out. But I don't want to go into the story because it's too long. But I did want to ask Mark what he thought the egregore is behind the current mounting anger coming from the far left, the Marxist far left in this country, such as Antifa, and what we can do to prevent a civil war.
There's a lot of anger on both sides, Mark, and where is it stemming from?
Again, you know, it's interesting because in Kabbalah, there is this demonic being that's said, known as the contending heads or the dueling heads, and it's pictured as a beast with two heads but one body, and they both fight over whatever is going on, but it all goes to the same place, and really that's what we see with a lot of these kind of political arguments. Now, of course, communism is evil, and I say that because it's materialistic in nature. It seeks to put everything only on that secular framework and, of course, has destroyed many religious and esoteric activities and movements. So it's peculiar that so many in the new and emerging religious movements really are very sympathetic to communism, not only because they don't know its history, but because it goes back to what I said earlier. It's an abuse of people's goodwill and idealism. It sells a utopian notion. And all utopian dreams end in nightmares. You know, that's how they go. So what you have to have about you is a certain amount of common sense, a certain amount of realism, which is difficult to have, okay, these days. And that desire to undermine, and even though, of course, we know the United States is by no means perfect, it is one of the preferred and desirable places to live at this time for a variety of reasons. The very fact that we can have these conversations is one of them, okay? But we're at a time when we see a lot of astrological forces and cycles where everything is moving towards constriction or limitation. And what we see with movements like political correctness, Antifa, communism, is an intense desire for not only constriction, but the ultimate kind of constriction, which is self-censorship, where people won't even begin to talk about things that are important to them. Well, there you have it. That's the best way. You don't have to control people. You just have to neutralize them or get them to control themselves.
Let's go to Mimi in Midland, Texas now. Hi, Mimi, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hi, George. What a joy to speak with you again. I'm the lady who had the close encounter with J. Allen Hynek.
Oh, yeah.
St. Louis.
Yeah, I remember that.
And maybe you remember. I also had a terrible encounter in a gambling casino in Colorado with what I can't really say the name. Is it egregores?
That's pretty good.
Okay. I had accompanied a friend on his birthday. He was a gambler. I'm not a gambler, but I had accompanied him to this casino. He had gone to get change. It was during the week, so it wasn't very crowded. I was the only person sitting on either side of the aisle at a slot machine. And a couple started coming toward me. And as soon as they got beside me, they stopped. And the man grabbed my arm and said, "We want your slot machine." And I said, "Well, this isn't my slot machine. I'm just saving the place for my friend." Well, this man, and he was with a woman, they went ballistic, like I had celibate fan. Keep in mind, there's nobody but me sitting on either side of this long aisle. And, you know, I told him I'm sorry, you know, but I promised him, and, you know, there must be another one you could find that would suit you. Well, they went the rest of the way down the aisle, cursing me with every word out of their mouth all the way down the aisle. So I instantly knew that this man was either a gambling addict or was under the influence of something not right.
Or the machine paid off and he wanted to come back.
Well, I don't think so. We had been there quite a while, but that is a possibility. But my friend returned, and about 10 minutes later, here comes this couple again. And the man is just horrified at this point, and he says, "Ma'am, I am so sorry." He said, "I don't know what's wrong with me."
Wow. He apologized.
Yes. He said, "Can you please forgive me?" And I said, "Of course I can." And he said, "We lost a lot of money tonight. I'm just not in a good frame of mind, but I don't know what's wrong with me." And the woman never said anything. And I assured them that I had forgiven them.
You think he was possessed?
Well, I'll get to that in my story. He left, and about 10 minutes later, here they came again. And he said, "I just can't believe you've forgiven me." And I said, "Please believe me. You know, I prayed about it. I blessed and released you. You're fine." And, you know, he kind of went on about it for a while, and I could tell he was just massively disturbed over his own behavior.
Yeah.
Well, to make a long story short, I did a little research into this. And it's my understanding that what we're calling an egregore is what the Bible refers to as a beast. Not the beast, but a beast. And it refers to it in a couple of places in the Bible. And a beast is a demonic entity that feeds off of earthbound souls who have a particular affliction, or they're addicted in life.
Mm-hmm. Or a weakness or something like that. Mark, what do you think of that possibility?
Well, again, egregores, you know, the word comes from the Watchers, okay? And there are different types. So you have this possibility of again, group activities, egregores, beings that are helpful to us, and those which are not. I mean, the fact that it's run into in a casino is no surprise. I mean, what's going on there? A lot of desperation, a lot of desire for easy money. There's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of alcohol involved.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably some drugs going around there, as well as prostitution. So, you know, the fact is, these are all the kinds of highly emotional, energetic energies that are just, you know, going off like sparklers. I mean, if we could see it from a psychic realm, I mean, this is just a buffet of energy. But what's going to go feed there is, well, are you going to go to a fast food restaurant, or are you going to go to, you know, a high dining gourmet? You know, it's what meets your appetite What is it that you're going?
Or your wallet.
Yeah, or your wallet. Oh yeah, then we go to the diner, which is halfway in between.
That's right, exactly.
But that's what happens. So I'm sure that you're going to run into that there, where you would run into someone else in a different environment.
And in this particular case, the guy knew he did wrong, but couldn't understand why. I think these entities get you when you have your hands down. When your gloves are off and you're not defending yourself, they get you.
Exactly. That's the whole point. It's about what is the easiest way in, what is the most susceptible. How do you get people to join cults? Well, always when they're down and out, how do you get people to throw their lot in with, adventurous political activity, to be polite? Well, usually when they're down and out.
Yeah. How do you get people to give up their rights? You scare them.
Yes, fear. Fear is the thing, and this is something your listeners need to understand. The human being is designed for fear, because that's a survival mechanism to see what's out there to threaten us. The problem is when we move beyond fear or apprehension, we'll kind of say, to worry. Worry is ruminating about things which are not a direct threat to our survival. And when you start fearing things, our neurochemistry requires at least 3 to 5 times the amount of energy and time in positive thinking and positive feelings just to bring us back to baseline, just bring us back to normal. So when you get really absorbed into a lot of negative and stinking thinking, as they say in the recovery movement, and, get people, places, and things, then you're open. You're open to these negative influences.
You've even looked at the possibility of egregores being tied into UFOs?
Yes, and I think because there's a lot of similarities. As Valet has pointed out, the UFO phenomenon is best understood as a social control mechanism, because we really don't know what's going on there. And what we see within the occult community, the paranormal community, the UFO community, is that each of these operates, again, within its own egregore, so to speak, its own unique perspective on things. And the problem is they need to talk to each other better.
Mm-hmm.
To understand, as Valet has pointed out, to understand UFOs, you need to understand occultism. They're not separate experiences.
Right.
And those discrete views are, again, ways of having little cubbyholes that keep us from actually getting to any useful answers. Jean Dubuis, who was the founder of the chemical organization, the Philosophers of Nature, he used to tell a story, and he said, well, one of the things about UFOs is that it's used as a mechanism to generate psychic energy. And who for? Who benefits from that psychic energy? Who gets the payoff of it? And that's where Valet talked a great deal about that. UFOs, utopian movements, occult movements, and how all of that is used as, again, a social control mechanism.
We're coming back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with a researcher and author, Mark Stavish. And we're going to take your final phone calls as well, and your stories, your paranormal stories or ghostly apparitions or strange things that have happened to you. So we will be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Mark Stavish with us. His latest book is called Egregores, and it's available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. Mark, you talk a little bit about magic in this book. Tell me what that means and how that works.
Well, again, magic is often related to the classical period of Egypt and Greece and Rome. And when we talk about the Renaissance as the rebirth of learning, what we're really talking about is the rebirth of those subjects. And the communication with the visible entities was an important part of it, whether they be thought of as gods or whether they be thought of as something else. So magic organizations often like to think of themselves as having that pipeline open to the invisible. Otherwise, really, what makes them different? If they don't have that, why join them, right? And many of them make a great deal out of their contacted status, as they call it, or their egregore. And within that, you see people will seek to become an embodiment of the ideas and the ideals of their spiritual group. And that means taking on or becoming a physical conduit for those psychic energies of the egregore.
Now, we were talking before the break about the possibility of the egregore and the UFO phenomena tied in. Mm-hmm. And there are some, Dr. David Jacobs believes that the UFO phenomena is evil. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, it's you just have to look at what we hear. Again, there's so many people who only talk about the so-called space brothers in this positive light, but there's ample evidence to show that contact with these beings, and we don't know where they're from, is not always positive. And again, Vallée has a caseloads of that he published over 20, 30, 40 years ago, and yet often it's ignored. The activities that we get from UFOs is not consistent with a sophisticated, advanced, or technologically advanced culture. So why are they here and what do they want from us?
They want our souls, don't they?
Well, there's some, you know, the soul is an energy source. And one of the things about an egregore is the way some of them were created.
They feed off this, don't they?
Well, yes. And going back to the classical method, some of the ways they were created was by capturing the psychic energy, the astral shell, if you will, of often executed criminals. And you could, instead of that shell, if you will, breaking down as it would in the afterlife, it's kept alive and used as a conduit between the physical and the psychic dimensions. Now, you see, on a positive light, you see the same thing like with, you know, saints and holy people who say, I'll stick around. I'll continue to be here to help you. Okay, that's the positive view. The negative one is where someone becomes basically a kind of a psychic or spiritual prisoner or a willing participant.
Next up, first-time caller Dennis is in Idaho with us. Hi, Dennis, go ahead.
Hi, George. It's been a while. I haven't talked to you. I thought I dialed the wild card line.
That's all right.
Hi, Mark.
Hello?
Yes, hello, guys. Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to make a comment real quick here about this, and then you guys take it away, okay?
Okay.
Okay, I went with the monks one time, and the monks taught me the source of all pain and suffering are beliefs, which and judgments, which in many cases are mind illusions that we make up and we believe things. Okay, now the next comment here is, we've had guests on your show, and there's some well-known near-death experience websites, and these two together have said they've never seen any devils or any demons in their experiences. There's nobody that has seen that. And one of the guys is a well-known astral travel guest, George, that you've had on. And then I've heard EVPs, people that are talking in human voices that seem to be around the earth somewhere that they record. Now, the last thing here is, is there a demiurge that has created our reality here and there's archons that manipulate us all here and that this going through the tunnel and the reincarnation rebirth is some type of a ploy to keep us held and hostage? What do you guys think about that?
Well, I'm not so sure about that aspect. What about you, Mark?
Well, you know, there's several questions that, you know, everything is a matter of our perception. So, as I said, if you are able to have a healthy spiritual life, you're going to be less likely to fall under the influence, of course, of these negative energies, because there has to be a toehold in you before that can happen. There has to be a toehold in you, and that starts with your own negative thinking and self-pity and those poor concepts. You know, we have to think of ourselves in broader and more potent ways to actualize our full potential, which is what spirituality is about. What was the other question? There were three of them there before the demi.
Well, I'm not even sure they were questions. They were more of observations and things,
you know,
like that.
As far as hell realms go, we often talk about them, but people don't want to believe in them. And
there's a variety of realms in the invisible, just as there's a variety of realms in our physical world that we can go to, and they represent different states of consciousness or awareness. So just because someone doesn't visit Moscow doesn't mean Moscow doesn't exist. And just because someone doesn't see these less desirable places doesn't mean they don't exist. Yeah. And then same with what we call angelic or Buddha realms, Buddha fields. Someone says, well, I didn't see those. Well, it doesn't mean they don't exist. As far as this kind of demiurge, that's a Gnostic question. That's the view of the Gnostic philosophy. And look, we live in duality. It's very simple. Duality means that there's a plus and a minus. There's strength and weakness. There's positive and negative. And just as we are here, in a sense, to actualize our full potential, we need something to actualize it against, and meaning there has to be some friction, like weightlifting. You got to have some weight. And we could say that this purpose of the demiurge is to be the weight that we lift in order to overcome the various obstacles of life through experience, and in that become awakened or enlightened.
What if for some reason, Mark, there is no afterlife, there's nothing? What does that tell you then about all these stories that we hear from people? There's got to be something to it.
Well, yeah, it's to say there's nothing is problematic, because while we can't definitively say that someone has gone and come back, what we do have is significant amount of anecdotal evidence from research, recent parapsychology, and of course folklore. But just let's look at the current research. You know, how does someone who is having an out-of-body experience on an operating room table, how do you explain the fact that they can see and observe things and remember things that are not physically visible to them from their position on the table? Where does this altered state of awareness and perception and information come from? How does that function and operate? So if we just go with some very basic ideas right there, we can say, well, we're more than just our physical organs and senses.
Let's go to Rex in Burns, Oregon. Hey, Rex, go ahead.
Hey. I was just going to talk about, I actually had two stories, and they're pretty short. But one, when I was a kid growing up, my grandparents, they lived on a ranch, and they had like an open-air porch and, you know, no windows, just screens.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, no breeze, no nothing. This old school kind of a metal old rocking chair would just start rocking all by itself, and they'd just smile, and they'd be like, oh, that's Henry, and that was the name of the guy that lived in the house like years prior, you know, that was gone, obviously, at that time. And you know, I mean, it kind of brought comfort to him, and it was just like, oh yeah, there's Henry, and the chair would just be rocking all by itself, and it just rocked for quite a while, and then it just quit for no reason. And and then when I was growing up over in Bend, Oregon, my mom had a friend that her kids kept saying that they would hear kids in the closet, and they didn't know what.
Whoa.
You know, they'd hear these little kids' voices in the closet, and it kind of scared them a little bit. And you know, and they were just kids as well.
Sure.
Well, their mom went and did some research, and on that very place where their house was built, before they'd lived there maybe 10 or 15 years prior, the house had burnt down from two little kids that were playing in the closet with matches, and the little children died.
And they died. Wow.
Yep.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it was wild. So, I haven't had too many experiences, but I mean, that was, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't there obviously with the kids and heard the voices, but you know, I was there when the lady would talk to my mom, and you know, I knew the whole story.
I didn't know.
To see that rocking chair rock when I was a kid, you know, just for no reason at all, it would just start rocking, and then it would quit.
Do the egregores get involved in things like that, Mark, where they would burn a house down?
Well, I think that it depends on the size and what kind of egregore we're talking about. Of course, if we're looking at large national egregores who are coming into conflict, then you know, warfare is a byproduct on the physical plane of that conflict, and that's a lot of house burning. So in that respect, but what you're talking about here is a kind of poltergeist phenomena or a haunting phenomena. And, you know, again, it's very difficult for these beings in the invisible to, it takes a lot of energy to do even the most modest thing in the physical domain. That's why they need a human conduit or host. Yeah, if you got strange noises coming from your closet, it's time to call somebody in again.
Yeah, it sure is.
Evict the unpaying tenants, as we say.
Carol in Springfield, Illinois, first-time caller. Hi, Carol.
Hi, George.
Good morning.
I really relate to this subject on such a personal level. I see this working in my world, especially in my own health care. I was researching a serious health care issue, and I found that I really needed to heal my emotional body to really overcome all of this that's taken over our current medical system, negative thinking, not really following the positive to its fullest, and working with the good energies on our earth. And I found that really this healing is so important in all aspects of healing the human body.
Oh, there's no question about that. You still there?
Tapped into and worth the effort.
Mark?
Well, very much.
Healing through energy like that. What do you think?
Yeah, the healthier you can be, and through just good eating, good exercise, good thoughts. Thoughts are the foundation of all of our activities. They're foundation of all of our experiences, and that means they're the foundation of our life. So whatever encourages and enhances positive thinking and feeling, not just the image and the idea, but the feelings that go with it, automatically has a positive health and enhancing effect on our physical body. We know this from a great deal of research. And then, of course, that extends into our relationships, and that extends into our life. And, of course, people who are doing that don't find themselves caught up in a lot of the frustrations you see on social media. They don't get caught up in a lot of the anxiety that is happening in different organizations and groups, because they're having a healthy and happy life for themselves.
Kelly in Ames, Iowa. Go for it, Kelly.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah, it starts back when I was about 8, 9 years old. I lived in San Diego, and I kept telling my mom, I see an outline of a man. And then she talked to the landlord and found out a man died in there.
Oh, boy.
And then
you saw it.
Yes, I had seen it several times. And then we moved and came to Iowa, and my younger son, he kept pointing up to the upstairs going, rah, rah. And I was like, what do you see? And he told me he sees a man. And now my younger daughter, she's 4, and she tells us all the time that she sees a man in her bedroom.
Do you think this entity followed you?
That's what I'm thinking.
They do that, Mark, don't they?
Yeah, they can. I mean, they can attach to a particular person. You know, he's got young children, so they're very energetic. They've got a lot of emotional energy. And, of course, anything that creates threat to our children creates fear and anxiety and anger. So we can feed it. So I would say that if you actually are seeing these things, the best thing is to do make sure you have a good spiritual life. You know, watch your thoughts and your actions, and you know, contact maybe a local. And there, of course, you have to be very careful here. You got to do some research on who's reliable, but see if you can find a reliable, you know, paranormal research group that does resolutions. They don't just come.
Well, they're out there. You just have to find them. Mark, thanks again for being on the program, and good luck with the book, okay?
Thank you so much.
We're going to come back and have a great program for you on Friday night as we talk more about the unusual and, of course, open lines on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesord, Tim Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.